This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Well, thank you and good morning, Roger. You and Matt got into some very heavy stuff this morning.
Yes, we did. And
yes, you did. So I thought I would start on a little lighter note because this came across the internet a couple of days ago. Notice posted on a sign in a farmer's field. The farmer allows walkers to cross the field for free, but the bull charges.
That's perfect.
Perfect. Well, anyway, I'll check back with you at 5:30.
Yes, sir.
All right. Look forward to it. And good morning to all of you out there around the world now that we have the technology that lets us sit here in WGN West, Scottsdale, Arizona, where yesterday, I shouldn't tell you this, but yesterday the temperature hit 90 degrees with clear skies, and talk to you every Saturday morning here on the Saturday Morning Show. We're going to our farm broadcaster friend, Lynn Kettleson, in Minnesota, to take a look at what's happening in the northern part of the Midwest, and not much better there than it is in some of the central parts. As a matter of fact, this week I noted that Lincoln, Illinois hit an all-time record low for the month of April, when on Monday it got down to 1 below 0 in Lincoln, Illinois. That's cold. It really is. So anyway, we're going to check in with Max Armstrong, talking markets in the second half of the show. And when we come back, we're going to check in with Lynn Kettleson. How cold is it? How much snow in Minnesota? That we'll learn when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. From time to time, we like to check with fellow farm broadcasters around the country to get a fix on what's going through the minds of farmers and ranchers. And this morning, we're turning to our good friend, longtime farm broadcaster, Lynn Kettleson at the Linder Farm Network in Owatonna, Minnesota. And you were telling me a couple of minutes ago you've still got snow on the ground?
We have a lot of snow on the ground here, Orion. Just a few days ago, we had 10 inches of snow, and everyone was already thinking of spring because it's already spring, but it's not quite ready to be warm weather here yet. So we're supposed to get another snow in the next few days, and, you know, we're in the Northland. Winter lasts a long time sometimes.
Well, the planters are always ready, and once they get rolling, my golly, they can plant a lot of acres in a week.
They really can, and they have these fields set up now, so there's no fences. Like when you and I were growing up, there was a fence around every field. Now it's just open and away you go. So they can get a lot done in a very short period of time. Everyone is worried about it. Every year we hear about
yes.
potential delayed planting, but we seem to get the crop in the ground.
Well, it's an interesting time for agriculture. The controversy over biofuels and the renewable fuel standard, and of course the trade issues that we have going with the Trump administration and China. You know, one of the things I've really wondered during all this, I'm wondering how Terry Branstad, the former governor of Iowa, now ambassador to China, is dealing with this, and if he is at all with a voice in China. I just don't know at this point. So what are Minnesota farmers saying about the controversies?
Well, they're very concerned about it. I think we have more on farmer-owned ethanol plants online in Minnesota than any other state. I'm not sure, but I think there's something like 14 of them, and we've got a couple of biodiesel plants. So biofuels are big here in Minnesota and around the Midwest, and farmers are concerned about it. There's no question about it. Ethanol prices are not where they were. They're not that profitable at the moment. So a lot of concern about China with the biofuels. And, of course, the whole trade and saber-rattling that's going on right now has everyone very concerned. Now, the one thing that is interesting to me, people are saying, well, we lost this much money in soybean prices with the drop that we've seen, but nobody's selling soybeans right now. Either they've already sold paper soybeans, or they've sold, or they're in the bin. So we're not losing as much money as people tend to say, because you don't lose anything unless you're selling something. So there's always time for things to bounce back up, and I think they will.
Well, I tend to agree with you. And the interesting thing in the soybean issue with China this week, well, on yesterday, I saw these sales reported, 131,000 tons of soybeans, unknown destinations. That's generally China. 327,000 tons of soybeans sold yesterday to unknown. And yesterday, 65,000 tons of soybeans to Mexico, and another 65,000 ton sale of soybeans to Mexico. So even though we're into the trade issues, we're still selling in the world market.
Yeah, and Sonny Perdue made that point, that even though they're talking about potential soybean duties, they're not in place yet. Their tariffs are not there, and the U.S. is talking about some potential tariffs. Now, again, we already have the ethanol and the pork, and that's real. But the soybeans, that's just saber-rattling. And China knows they need our soybeans.
Right.
They need beans. And we need their market, quite frankly. If they buy from other people, then other people are going to need our beans. So at the end of the day, it's just, this is leading up to potential talks, and I'm not convinced it's going to be as bad as everyone says. I think we're on the verge of a new NAFTA, and golly, it was just a couple weeks ago that all three sides were yelling at each other about NAFTA, and we're never going to get an agreement and all that, and it sounds like a new NAFTA is imminent. Maybe that's what it's going to take to get this China thing equaled out, because it has not been equal trade for the United States. It's scary how favorable it is for China and not favorable for us overall. And something needs to be straightened out.
Another subject. There's a long history of unhappiness on farmers' parts with the Environmental Protection Agency. So it's not unusual to hear again another situation that is spurring a very bad feeling for farmers toward EPS or the EPA. And now the waiver of the RFS standards for small refineries that say they're going broke because of it. What are you hearing in Minnesota?
Well, we've heard a lot about that, and actually the troubling part, it's more of these plants than we thought that were getting waivers. And so there's a lot of concern about that right now and what that's going to mean. On the flip side, when you talk about the job the EPA has done, and Scott Pruitt is the EPA administrator, the waters of the U.S., which I think could have been really bad for farmers, that's been held up. There's
right.
A relaxing of a lot of different EPA rules and regulations. So sometimes you have to take the good with the bad. But this one, it's troubling. At the end of the day, is it going to hurt that much? I don't think so, but I think obviously the ag groups don't want it to get out of hand here, so they're yelling a lot about it. Has it hurt a lot? I guess I don't think so.
Dairy farmers, hearing a lot about the challenge that they're having. How about dairying in Minnesota?
We're losing a dairy a day, believe it or not. It's around the state. The numbers are pretty scary with how many are going out of business, and it's the smallest ones that are going out first, and it's people that are 65 years old or older that their kids don't want to milk, they can't sell their dairy, no one wants to buy them, And at the end of the day, the only answer for them is to liquidate and retire and move on, or just crop farm for a while. So we're seeing that happen. I'm not sure that that is simply economics. I don't think so. I think a lot of it is just these people are tired of working so hard, Orion. You grew up working that hard on a dairy farm. You know what it's all about.
I really do, and I can't blame them for wanting to get out of that schedule of early morning rising and having to get home from afternoon events on Sunday early so you can do the milking. Finally, I was delighted to get an email inviting me to come to Farm Fest in August. And, of course, I've been out of action from the standpoint of being able to move like I like to, but that's turning around thanks to the doctors at Mayo and the best doctor in the world, my wife. And so I'm looking forward to coming back to Farm Fest in August.
You know, it was fun because last time you were here, the governor of Minnesota proclaimed the day you were at Farm Fest, Orion Samuelson Day in the state of Minnesota, and that
I remember that
done before. Yeah, that was a big deal, and you know, this really is kind of a second home for you. I think your heritage and background, people relate to you, and they love you here, and it's always fun to get you back to Minnesota. It's so much fun, and we're going to be doing that again. So I know you'll be in good shape. The show that we're doing, it's a little different format. We're going to be sitting and doing our regular radio broadcast instead of wandering around the stage. And so I think that we did that last year, and it worked out really good. We'll probably have the Ag Secretary there with us, Sonny Perdue, and you'll be there, and it should be a whole lot of fun.
Will the president of the Farm Bureau be there? Because is that not a Farm Bureau show?
Yeah, it's owned by American Farm Bureau Federation, so I would guess so. He was there last year. The national president, Zippy, and the state president, Kevin Papp, who you know quite well as well, and they will all be there. It's going to be a fun year because our former governor, Tim Pawlenty, is running for governor again, and that's going to create a lot of excitement. So political years are always exciting, and especially when you're at Ag Show and these guys all want to get on stage in front of the microphone.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and that date again is August
7th, 8th, and 9th, and we have 7th. You there coming on the 8th. In the biggest day of the show is always the middle one, and that's right. Where we like to get you in.
Well, I am looking forward to it, and thank you for the invitation again, and let's get those cornfields and soybean fields planted, okay?
We will do that, Orion. Always good to talk to you, and I tell you what, if you've been laid up, you can't tell it by your on-air. You sound just as good as ever.
Well, it didn't affect my voice. It affected my legs and my back, but it didn't affect my voice, and I'm grateful for that because I just celebrated my 84th, and so I figure I'm about half done.
You're doing great. Just keep it going. That's the thing. You got to stay mobile. You got to keep moving, and that's what you're doing, and I salute you for it. So it'll be fun to see you. We're really looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it, too. That's our visit today with Lynn Kettleson of the Linder Farm Network based in Owatonna, Minnesota, here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's 27 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. And I briefly mentioned the fact that I celebrated a birthday a week ago today. But I then have to quickly go on and say thank you to all of you who found time to email birthday greetings. Now, that probably happened a good deal because Max Armstrong talked about it on our TV show This Week in Agribusiness, and then on Facebook posted a picture of me sitting on the Farmall F20 tractor restored that I grew up on the farm in Wisconsin. But thank you. I'm always amazed at how many of you can find time to say happy birthday, and you certainly did last week, and I've been working at it all week long. So thank you very much for that. Today is the day in St. Charles where the Kane County Farm Bureau is inviting you to come and visit today and again tomorrow to touch a tractor. This is the 13th year that they have done a touch a tractor, and they're looking forward to, well, they started yesterday at noon. The hours today, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and it is sponsored by the Kane County Farm Bureau Foundation for Ag Literacy and their scholarship programs. The public invited, admission to the event, a donation of $5 per family or $2 per adult, or show a winner's choice raffle ticket stub for free admission for your family. And then they've invited all of the farmers who love to restore and show off their old tractors to bring the tractor to the Kane County Farm Bureau, which is right next door to the fairgrounds on Randall Road in St. Charles. So for a full day of family fun for $5, and we hope a lot of you will make it to that event because the kids will love it. They'll actually get to sit in the seat of a real tractor, not a toy tractor. So that's at the Kane County Farm Bureau today and again tomorrow, St. Charles, Illinois. It's time for my annual sermon on this subject, the availability of scholarship money for college students. By now, I'm sure a lot of you parents with graduating high school seniors have sticker shock from looking at the cost of a college education during the years for your young man or lady. But let me tell you, there is money available. And as I've said many times before, it will not come looking for you more than likely, so you have to go looking for it. And the reason that I'm talking about it this week, in the mail this past week, I received a press release, and let me quote, United Ag, a member-owned agricultural trade association representing more than 800 organizations in California and Arizona, announced today that it has awarded a record $100,250 in scholarships to 86 students from its member-affiliated agricultural families statewide. Provided through United Ag's Agribusiness Education Foundation, the 2018 awards raise the organization's historical scholarship total to over $1.4 million since it was founded in the year 2000. And to date, 805 agricultural family members have received United Ag's assistance in achieving their educational goals and aspirations. And this is just one organization that awards scholarships for various reasons, for various programs. And why do they do it? Well, the chairman of the United Ag Board of Directors said, the Agribusiness Education Foundation is incredibly important in assuring that the agricultural industry and our society as a whole has a bright future. FFA does it, 4-H does it, a lot of local agribusinesses do it. It's out there. But as I said, it won't come looking for you more than likely, so that means you have to go looking for it. But there are many companies, individuals that want to help young students studying agriculture. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks, and let's get on here in a minute or two to talk markets and particularly the trade situation impact on markets, because Max Armstrong is standing by with his guest when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show.
We welcome into the studio this weekend from International Agribusiness Group, Mark Feit. Good to have you back, sir.
Thanks, Mac.
We'll talk about China in just a second, but I have to ask you about all of this cold weather. And we did get a confirmation the other day that the wheat crop is as lousy as everybody thought. Maybe, some people were saying, maybe the USDA, in fact, is underestimating the damage to the winter wheat crop in the plains.
Well, it's always very difficult this time of year to assess how much damage there is. We certainly know that you can't go 4 months without rain, and especially in the southern parts of those winter wheat areas, that without some damage. So crop last year at 750, our guess today is it's at 600 million on the hard red crop.
And certainly the condition rating showed that it's worse than a year ago. I think, what, a year ago 51% of it was good to excellent, and now we're down in under 40.
Under 40, and it certainly looks ugly, and some of that, I'm sure, rain is not going to help.
We have seen those years, though, when a late rain can bring some of it along, that I gather. You know, I saw one image this week of blowing dust, and the comment was that that was certainly going to be harmful to anything that was out there in those fields.
Yes, I think in Oklahoma, Texas, that crop is certainly devastated. The one crop that still has a chance, I think, is parts of western Kansas, which is a critical part of that hard red crop. So, but it needs something pretty quick. There's nothing in the forecast today that shows that we're going to get any relief.
Now let's switch over to corn for just a moment. There are so many folks who want to be in the fields soon doing some planting. And yet I looked back over the past 6 years, the average as of the 1st of May, we only have about a third of the corn crop in the ground generally by May 1st. We're not going to get too far behind here, are we?
It's hard to say. You're 1st of April, and where we're supposed to plant corn, it's going in the ground. We're slowed down a little bit in the south. I think that what we do have going for us is that most of the Midwest is relatively dry. So a couple days of warm weather would get us back in the fields pretty quick.
And we have the big machinery, of course, to accomplish a lot of planting in just a very short period of time.
Yeah, a week, 10 days of dry weather certainly gets us ahead of the game and can get most of that crop planted.
I thought it was interesting the other day, too. Respected agronomist Bob Nielsen at Purdue University said there is not a real strong direct correlation between early planting of the corn crop and the ultimate yields. He says that is something that is to be considered, but there are so many other factors, too, that weigh into the ultimate yield of the corn crop.
Well, I think that's true, and our data certainly bears that out, that recently, in the last 10 years, that the planting date has had less impact on the yield. I think that has a lot to do with the equipment that we're using, that we can go in less than ideal conditions and still get very good stands.
But you'll be watching the corn crop a little more closely than maybe you thought, given the numbers shared by USDA a few days ago.
We certainly are. It's put a lot of pressure on the corn yield. 88 million acres was not a huge surprise. We knew it was down. We talked about a 2 million acre drop earlier in the year. So it does certainly put a lot of pressure on the yield. Many people in the market believe that crop is bulletproof. We're going to find out this year.
It'll be interesting to see if we can sustain that climb in the yield per acre. Investment funds were caught the other day in that latest news from USDA, were they not?
Oh, I think so. We had 3 out of 4 pieces right. We had corn acres down, spring wheat and cotton up. The big surprise and the big miss was certainly that bean acre number. Certainly taken some from spring wheat, has taken some of the bean acres, and then the total pie was down a little bit from where we thought it would be.
Now let's talk about the angst in the market because of China. The immediate reaction, the emotional reaction, we saw it not only in commodities but in the equity markets too, was, oh my goodness, look out here, because we may be losing a lot of market for what we produce in the United States.
Well, emotionally, it does have an impact, and it's had an impact, I think, from a carryover from the equity markets. When we run the numbers, really the impact on old crop soybeans, I think, is going to be very minimal. South America can take our place and fill in the balance that China needs of about 10 to 11 million tons and just switch it from non-Chinese destinations, and then we take over and ship more out. I think it also helps our crushers, that we'll tend to crush a little more here in the U.S., and Brazil probably exports a little more.
So we would be sending to the world more meal then?
A little bit, but it's more about soybeans. We just shift. We take over some of the Brazilian non-Chinese destinations. They take over a bigger piece of the Chinese. On old crop, we don't think it has much impact at all. Based on our modeling right now, it would have about a 30-cent impact to U.S. basis on soybeans, negative basis to U.S. soybeans. That in itself would certainly help crushers in the U.S.
I got you. From the standpoint of the supply of beans in the world, there is this finite supply, and China is going to continue to need soybeans. I mean, they're not going to cut back their overall purchases, are they?
No, I don't think so. The only piece that we may lose here, if the tariff goes on, is that we felt like the Chinese wanted to buy a few extra beans to crush because crush margins are so good right now because of the Argentine issue, and we felt like they wanted to buy a few beans just to export meal.
But that likely wouldn't happen with the tariff in place.
If the tariff goes in place, I think that takes that piece away. It's probably 3 to 4 million tons. It's not a big piece.
It's like adding to the cost of freight, basically. I saw your analogy on that.
Yes, I think that's the way you have to look at it, that it just increases. It's like a freight bill on the U.S. crop, and you have to shift where you're shipping so you don't have that freight issue, to eliminate or minimize that freight issue.
What about the logistics required to make that happen? Are the vessels out there available on the high seas to get in place to change what is needed and move it around?
Yeah, I think on the grains it's pretty easy. We can do that pretty quickly. We're shipping, those lines are open now. We're shipping to Europe and Asia, non-Chinese destinations anyway. We just we ship a few more and have a few more cargoes to those destinations. I think the tougher part is in the meats, that takes a little more time. You have to have specs approved and sanitary approvals to get some of this shipped. I think the meat sets a longer-term impact.
You mean to change the destination?
Yes, yes.
Speaking of meats, what is the situation in China regarding pork? Because we noticed that on the initial list right there was United States pork targeted for tariffs. Do they not already have plenty of their own?
They do. They've been taking a little bit of ours. They've taken about 9%. Last year, they took 9% of our exports. They're a relatively small customer. They're third or fourth with South Korea, Japan, and Mexico, much bigger, much more important. They could switch destinations there or the origins on that pork. They could take some more European stuff. But today, their domestic supplies are pretty big. And so their need for import is less than we have been in the past. So pork was a pretty good target for them.
Our hog production is dwarfed by theirs, is it not, in what is also the biggest pork-consuming nation of the world?
It is. When you look at just pork numbers, pig numbers, they're somewhere pushing 450 million. We're at 70 million. Europe's at 150. They're half the world's pork herd. They're not as productive as ours, but it's a lot of pork.
So they're what, five times greater than our production?
In numbers,
like that?
Yes.
Wow.
In numbers, it's, yep.
Back to soybeans and this trade dispute. Is it your feeling the negotiations are continuing behind the scenes? Do you think we are talking with the Chinese? What do you hear about that?
I think this whole posturing is just to get people to the table and talk about some of the issues and put pressure on the negotiation. So maybe I'm a little naive, but I think that this is about negotiation, and the tariffs won't go in place. If they do, they're short-lived, and we'll go back to trading like we normally do.
There is much that happens in trade negotiations that we don't know about at the time, isn't there? I mean, they are so complex and take place necessarily behind closed doors.
Absolutely. But I think this is a little different. This certainly, China is not Mexico and Canada. And this is a little tougher partner and negotiating partner.
Well, let me talk about that a bit. The Chinese are known to be shrewd traders. I mean, we've watched this going on for years. And they will pull some shenanigans it seems, in the past, deliberately drive down the market for a grain. And then, lo and behold, they come in and buy. Is that happening this time?
You can never prove it, but certainly it would give them an opportunity. The timing was interesting that the Dalian markets are closed have been closed since yesterday and through Monday. So their markets won't trade this piece, at least the initial response to the tariff or the tariff talk. But it's possible that they certainly have that leverage to move the market.
When we see unknown destinations designated for grain sales in the next few days, could that be China soybeans?
It's very possible. There's they've probably got 2 to 3 million tons labeled unknown today that we would expect would be theirs.
In the past, we've heard of them canceling purchases. How does that work? Most of us, when we enter into an agreement to buy something, there are consequences for canceling a contract. How do the Chinese handle this?
Well, it is much of that is done booked basis only, and so the risk is basis. As a seller, your risk is basis, maybe not the board. You're hedged, or it's unpriced until it's shipped. So some of that risk and some of that cost is pretty limited. But eventually somebody's got to bear that risk. We haven't seen that in the last couple of years. It's been, they've done it in the past when things got tight. But hopefully this is not going to be the case this year.
Back to the soybean market, in these times when we see some immediate overreaction, whether it's in commodities or in the equities, quite often we'll see that market coming back to erase the losses. But in this particular instance, is there the possibility we might continue to see a little bit of a downward trend here in soybeans? What's your gut feeling?
Well, I think the soybean market's still got a little too long, a little too much long that we need to drain out.
And that was part of the reason for the initial very strong negative reaction, was it not?
I think so. I think that was some of the spec and some of the spec money coming out. Not much traded. It was a pretty quick move, so the volume traded on that was pretty small. But I still think you've got a little too much long in the meal, a little too much long in the soybean that needs to come out. There really isn't much of a story other than the tariff, and it may push the U.S. farmer to want to sell more beans, get more aggressively hedged if the risk is out there of this market going away.
I was going to ask you that. Is the producer well advised to do some marketing here?
Well, I think they've certainly had good opportunities at good prices, profitable levels to get new crop and old crop hedged. I think they are. I wouldn't change my program, I guess, because of the tariff talk. But I think the response from the farmer, a normal response would be, well, I'm going to limit my risk or I'm going to plant corn.
Mark Feit from International Agribusiness Group.
We're just a couple of minutes away from the 6 o'clock news here on WGN, but with all the trade talk between China and the U.S. this week, what about NAFTA? Because there was a meeting in Washington, and the headline that I received on Reuters, no breakthrough at NAFTA talks, U.S. timeline could be in doubt. But then there was a follow-up headline, story on Reuters, that said NAFTA teams to continue meeting in coming days. So after that meeting between the ministers from the U.S., Canada, and Mexico in Washington ended yesterday, Mexico's economy ministry said that three countries agreed that their negotiating teams should press on with technical work in coming days. So that's the latest headline on NAFTA. Markets at the end of the week, we saw July soybeans gain 3¾ cents a bushel yesterday, 10.44¾, and we saw July corn ending at $3.97 a bushel, down 1¼ cents. In livestock futures yesterday, live cattle lower, profit-taking and fund selling, according to the traders on the floor. And so at the end of the day yesterday, it was pretty much a red screen with the June lean hog contract down 67 cents, the June live cattle contract down the $3 limit yesterday, and the April feeder cattle contract down $2.65 a hundredweight. So that's a pretty big look at markets this morning, and that's our time here on the Saturday Morning Show. As always, I appreciate Bob Ferguson Engineering back in Chicago. I appreciate your listening for our weekly get-together here on the Saturday Morning Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.